originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is, of course, the show trainers listen to, and we are happy to have you listening to us all over the world. Of course, nationwide on Sirius 219, XM Channel 201, and streaming us globally with our live streaming on your computer or your mobile device. You're doing that at horseracingradio.net. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired top trainer, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. We are in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios and ready to roll for the next hour. And JT, as we talk about every single week, we start this show and sometimes we talk about trainers who are just getting started. Sometimes it's more established trainers. Today we kind of have a little bit of a mix. Tonight's guest has been training for a few years. But really, I think people look at him as a trainer that's really just getting started with this training career.
Yeah, well, he's had some nice horses and tremendous success in a few short years. And best of all, he's a guy that always has our business at heart and does a lot of charitable work. So we need more people in our sport like our guest.
Yeah, well, he's been involved with racing for roughly four decades. The 66-year-old trainer was born in Genoa, Italy, in 1951, a longtime owner and breeder, he applied for his training license in 2013, saddled his first winner in February of 2014, and since that time has now saddled 99 winners. They've earned nearly $3 million in purses, and he is trainer Carlo Vacareza, and nice enough to spend the hour with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Carlo, welcome, my friend. Happy to have you on board.
Good morning.
Good morning, and looking forward to the visit here today and looking forward to hearing your story. 99 wins over the course of a very short time period. Really, you think about it, just 5 years, actually 4 years, going back to February of 2014 when you saddled your first. Things have gone okay for you on the trainer front.
It took a little bit of a while to get settled down, and then the first year, we have that many horses, and now lately, we just to change gears a little bit, said to have a quantity, we just got quality, and we try to get the 100 hopefully tomorrow.
That's good. Yeah, that's always a big milestone to hit 100 winners, and to tell you the truth, as often as you win, I'm kind of surprised you haven't hit it already, but it's got to be getting close.
Yeah, it's one of those things, when you're really close. We ran some horses the last couple of weeks, so we have a really good chat and a couple of seconds, a couple of thirds, but hopefully tomorrow's the day.
Carlo, people are going to remember your name, you and your wife Priscilla, for campaigning 2012 Breeders' Cup Turf winner Little Mike. And on the ownership side, you've done very well. Why bridge into the training side of things? What led to that decision?
I don't know. I mean, I was, I spent like more than two decades with Dale, and one day, I talked to Dale, and, he said, listen, you got the passion for it, you got the knowledge for it, and just do it, and he was really helpful at the beginning. He set me up with an assistant trainer, a couple of ex-high riders that they didn't want to go back to Kentucky, and I started, one thing led to another, just we got a little bigger, and we bought some horses in Sayelin, tried to develop him some of the works on the D, and then you know, we have some really good friends, especially you know Paul Pampa and Michael Pietrangelo and Jen Williams. They start giving horses, and from a handful of horses, I wound up having 40, 50 horses in my barn.
Carlo Vacareza with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Carlo, you had the chance to do something that not many owners get to do. You not only got to campaign that Breeders' Cup Turf winner, but then you got to train him afterwards. He was in your barn. What was it like training little Mike?
Well, I mean, it was a dream of a lifetime and a lifetime of dreams. You know, just having him and was, you know, blessed and lucky enough to, I won a stake with him. I won the Flying Pigeon here and at Galston Park, and that was very rewarding. And then, you know, he, after that race, you know, basically he told me, listen, that is enough, you know, and I decided to retire him to all friends. You know? But having him at the barn for, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, that was with me. I mean, it was, I couldn't wait to get up in the morning, and the first stall that I went, as soon as I got to my barn, was little Mike, you know, and just he was an amazing horse. You know, just I hope I got the chance to get just one like him.
Yeah, his Breeders' Cup victory was extra memorable. I thought he would fit the downhill course at Santa Anita just perfectly, and he did. But it's really fun when you go out to old friends now, and they give the tour, and they say little Mike, and everybody goes, ooh, you know, they know who he is. He's a household word amongst horse fans and horse players, and he's quite an attraction out there at old friends.
He is. You know, I was there, a couple of weeks ago. I took Nick, my son Nick, to UK, and actually went to a sale in Keele, and I went to see him a couple of times, and he's in the main paddock there with Game On Dude, and they became the best of friends, you know. And he's having a time of his life, you know. And people that come and see him, when as soon as see people come in with some carrots or some peppermint, he came to the fence, you know. And he's still a little bit rambunctious, but he's a dream, you know. Just I wish a lot of trainers that they would be able to have from their career a horse like little Mike.
Does he remember you and your voice when you go see him at old friends, Carlo?
Amazingly, he did. You know, I just came in and I call him, and he came straight to the fence, you know, and, you know, he just kept sniffing him, sniffing me, excuse me, that, you know, I used to give him every morning. I used to give him a beer in the morning, and I used to give him a couple of peppermint. I used to love it.
Beer in the morning. I like that regimen.
You didn't take him a beer?
Yeah, I used to give him a beer every morning. I used to give him a Guinness stout, and this was a thing that when I spent 3.5 years with Alan Jerkins, you know, he was a firm believer. You know, I mean, no regular beer, it has to be a Guinness stout, and he loved it. You know, he just he used to just go there, put him in a little container, and he used to just drink it like a human. It was unreal.
What's the point of giving a horse a Guinness beer like that, Carlo? Why do trainers do that? We've heard that from other trainers too.
Well, I think that the way that Guinness stout is made, you know, with the barley and the oats and all the different ingredients is going to brew that particular beer, is supposed to be beneficial for the horses. You know, it's just, I don't know the bottom line of the science, but he works on a little mic, that's for sure.
I believe the iron in it too is very beneficial. Evidently used to have pregnant women drink Guinness too because of the iron to build up their systems for childbirth. So I think it's one of those beneficial things. It's like a healthy beer, right? You have a Guinness and you feel better.
Well, it's healthy. You drink one. You drink more than you drink a six pack. I don't think it's that healthy.
What about grappa? Did you ever give him a little bit of grappa?
No, I didn't try that. No honey syrup, no grappa. No sambuca yet.
Carlo Vacareza here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Carlo, walk us back to that day, that Breeders' Cup turf victory at Santa Anita. Put us there with you. What do you remember when you think back on that day?
Well, I mean, what's a really a crazy day going into the Breeders' Cup. We after Blue Mike won the Arlington Million, and you know, Dale and I we spoke many times, and ran him in a mile, ran a mile and a half, you know, and but you know, after seeing that Wise Dan was kind of a, you know, a monster going a mile on the turf, we decided to go a mile and a half. You know, and all the experts, they say, oh, my God, this horse, you know, he can go seven and a half. Well, you run seven and a half, he weighs seven and a half. Oh, this horse, he can go a mile, he run with a mile. Then a mile and 16, then a mile and a quarter. And we told the press that we'll run a mile and a half. Well, you should see some of the comments. You got to be crazy. I mean, why are you going to run Little Mike? So, you know, actually, Scott Hastings from TVG, he said, listen, you know, this horse is just an amazing horse. Every time that people say that he can't do it, you know, he win. So we decided to put him a mile and a half. And, we told Ramon, I said, listen, I'll be honest, your team probably is going to be a lot of speed on the race. And let's change a little bit. Let's call an audible at the last minute. And I said, just go, instead to go to Elite, just sit, you know, just let turbo compressor, and I forget about the other horse that was in the race that would have a lot of speed. So turbo compressor took the lead on the other horse, you know, there was, you know, head to head. And Dominguez sat, you know, saving ground on the rail, third or fourth, and, you know, and turned it from home and just caught him by surprise. And I think Doc Ramon opened at he started to ride him, and you know, on the turn, maybe by a 3/8 pole there, and you know, he was at one point like you know, like 3, 4, 5 in front, and then St. Nicholas Abbey and Chuck McGee, his horse, forgot his name, you know, they make a run for, and but they couldn't catch him. He was just full of himself, and he was just you know, cruising on the lead.
Yeah, he was long gone. It was such a beautiful race to watch, and Ramon did some of his best work. But having trained horses at Santa Anita for so many years, I knew that the downhill, sometimes you can kind of coast, and it takes a little bit of the distance factor out of it. Horses can run farther than they usually do on that course, even going a mile and 3/4. So I really liked him that day. I thought he was a very, very strong contender. He's such a magnificent animal. And Scott Hazelton was certainly right. I mean, he had overcome every test that you had given him.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, the problem would, and actually Dale, you know, said it, you know, perfectly. I mean, it's just the problem with Dale, Mike, If you take the lead and you're trying to run with him, he's going to destroy you. I mean, you can't keep up. You have so much stamina. But if somebody take the lead and they try to go in front and open up, and they're not going to last, he'll catch you at the end. I mean, it's just he never run a bad race. I mean, it's just that he always try. Even in the feed, you know, some races that he lost, you know, he was all out. I mean, he gave 100% every time he ran.
Yeah, by the way, the name of that Shug McGahee horse that Carlo was trying to think of was Point of Entry. He was the favorite in the Breeders' Cup turf that year, came flying at the end, ended up second, couldn't catch Little Mike, and the rest is history. Little Mike winning that race in 2012 at odds of 17-1 for then owner Carlo Vacareza, now training horses on his own and very close to that 100-win milestone, hoping to get it on Thursday. We'll see if he can pull it off. But Carlo with us here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Carlo, you mentioned a name just a little while ago, a legendary name in our sport. That's Alan Jerkins, and you said you spent a few years around him. Tell us about those years.
Well, I was when I started, I was they allocated me some stalls on barn 19 at Galveston Park, and and Alan was on 114. He'd been there for many, many years. So one morning, I used to see him every morning. One morning, you know, told me, listen, I'm not going back to New York anymore. You know, I'm getting a little too old and too tired just to continue doing New York, so I'm going to stay here around. So I went to the racing office and I talked to PJ Campos. Listen, you know, I mean, if it's an opportunity, you want to, you know, can you move me to Alan Jerkins' barn, because you only have half of the barn. And they said, no problem. So that's what happened. It's been 3.5 years, and he helped me tremendously. I mean, he was a great teacher, a great mentor, and I learned a lot from him, you know. And sometimes, you know, I used to say to me, you know, I understand how and why this man only has, you know, 14, 15 horses in the barn. I mean, his barn should be full, you know, because he was incredible. He was a very nice person. He just used to just to go out of his way to help you or to give you advice, and, you know, and he's always very kind. And, you know, we miss him tremendously.
Yeah, there was nobody like him. I was fortunate enough to ship a horse into Florida one time, and they put me in his barn basically because he was friends with Richard Mandela, and we each had a horse in the barn. And I'll tell you what, that was about the best 5 days I ever spent with another trainer. It was just a total education watching his action, all the things that he did. And like you say, just someone who was totally open with you. If you ask him a question, he would tell you exactly what he was thinking and why he was thinking it. And he was an amazing trainer.
Indeed, you know, and only that, he was a phenomenal human being. You know, just that he, not only with me because I was, you know, he was born, but anybody else, anybody who came over to a clocker stand and asked him a question, just, he went out of his way to just to, you know, give advice or help him. And, you know, we should have more people like him.
Carlo, when you work with your own horses today, what are some of the things that you've taken away from being around Alan Jerkins and Dale Romans and some of the other top trainers you've had the privilege to kind of watch and study? What are some of the specific things you've taken away from each of them that you're using today with your horses?
First of all, you know, I mean, you know, you know, every horse is an individual. I mean, you just can't have in a formula, you know, like in the restaurant you cook, you know, chicken parmesan or whatever, you know, pasta one way. I mean, you have to adjust, and that's I think that's one of the biggest thing that a trainer. I mean, you see the horse in the morning, and, you know, see how they go, see how they gallop, and, you know, and sometimes you have to tweak a little bit of the training, you know. And, you know, some horses like to be trained very lightly. I mean, some horses you have to just to push in harder. And, you know, some horses they have to, you know, you have to just to, they don't want to train 7 days a week. You know, some horses, they like to be more, they like to take them out early in the morning. Some horses have to like late in the morning, and it just kind of you know, but you get used to. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like having your own kids. I mean, you can have you know, four or five kids, you know, same father, same mother, and everyone is different. And the adjustment is, you know, takes a little while to get to the pattern of the horse, and then become pretty easy.
Yeah, I've always said that having kids is a big help to a horse trainer. because you have to figure out what they need when they're little. They can't tell you. And it's the same with the horse. You have to have kind of an intuition, an understanding without speaking.
Right. You know, and the thing is we're really, really into you know, vitamin supplements, health-wise, you know, and, you know, we try to, you know, use the best, you know, products available on the market, you know, from the feed, you know, and then this is what, you know, Todd Pletcher told me one day that, you know, actually he has his own formula of the way they feed horses. He was telling me one day, you know, it's very important, you know, it's just, especially, you know, young horses and the way that you try to develop them. And, you know, and just to you have to bathe them and, you know, and, you know, take care of them. I mean, you take care of the horse. I mean, I guarantee the horse is going to take care of you.
Carlo, I know that you enjoy naming horses after your children and your family members. You know, little Mike, obviously you have a son named Mikey. You have a son, Nick, who you mentioned earlier, now attending UK. Little Nick is another horse that did very well for you. There was little Priscilla. Little Alexis. Tell us about that and why that's so important to you.
I mean, you know, we need, you know, things happen sometimes, you know, Christine happened and with his naming. We always started with little Mike, you know, and then my daughter said, you know, Dad, what about me? And then Priscilla told me, well, what about me? And then I got a call from Scott Hazelton, a very dear friend of mine. He said, what about little Scott? So I called little Scotty. And they become every person that I knew. They said, what is my next horse? Little Caton, little Christina, you know. And usually I name horses, you know, for, I don't know why, but it became like kind of a trend that, you know, all those guys from TVG, they call me all the time, you know, just, you know, name a horse after me, you know, little Matt, little Todd. And just it was one of those things, you know, just to became viral. And I don't have enough horses, but I stopped doing that, you know. It's just I tried to call, actually my son Nick, you know, was pretty against that, and he told me, Dad, you better stop, let's call him a different name. And, you know, just, the thing little just you know, it's just a little bit too old, you know, so we tried to go a different way now.
Yeah, we always laugh because little Mike was out of a mare named Hey Jude, so Mike and I always thought that horse might have needed a different name, like HRRN.
Little Jude.
Yeah. You know, listen, if I tell you a story about little Mike and Hey Jude, I mean, this is one of the craziest stories. I was in Chicago, I don't know, probably in the early 90s. We was trying to build another olive oil company in downtown Chicago, and I moved to Chicago and I spent, you know, 3-4 years in Chicago. And, you know, I'm very good friend with Pat Greco, you know, he's a big food distributor in Chicago. And, you know, he has a big farm in St. Charles, Illinois, and, you know, he started, you know, racing horse in Hawthorne and Arlington Park, and the horses they make it, especially fillies, he bring it to a farm and breed him. So one day he called me and asked me, Carlo, God, I have like 50, 60 mares in the farm. I said, can you come to my farm and see? So he sent me the pedigrees, and I look, I said, Pat, I said, listen to me, these mares, they are, you know, I mean, you're not going to know where. You know, he was beating to some Illinois stallion, and he was going nowhere. So we tried to, you know, get rid of the mares, you know, find them a good home, tried to put them in some sales. And every time I went to a farm, this mare that was Hey Jude, she was following me. I used to get a golf cart, go around the farm. She was following me everywhere. It was like a pet. So Fast forward, one day, Tom Swanninger called me. Listen, Carl, there's two horses left on the farm. It's Chestnut Filly that my daughter's going to take, and the filly that you always follow you. You want it? I said, no, really, I don't want a mare. So the following year, I moved back to Florida, and one day Thomas said, listen, we need to get rid of this mare. Either you take it or, you know, somebody's going to take it. I said, listen, if somebody's going to take it, probably she's going to wind up in the wrong place. I'll take it. And I'll take it to Ocala. The first time I bred it to Tiger Ridge, and she produced Little Nick. So I was going to get rid of the mare, and one day I met, by mistake, I met Eddie Martin. So I went to his farm, and he's in the field bringing in a beautiful horse. I said, who is that horse? I said, this is Spanish Steps. Spanish Steps. Who is a Spanish Step? I never heard of Spanish Step. He's a full brother of Umbrado. She said, what are you going to do with that? I think I'm going to stand him here and maybe a stallion. I said, do you have a mare? I said, yeah, I have a mare. I said, I'm going to breed it to Spanish Steps. So the stud fee, he charged me $500 for the stud fee. I paid the $500 and she produced a Little Mike.
Wow.
That's great.
Wow, what a great story. You know, you talked about it earlier with the dream aspect of this sport, Carlo. That's a dream come true right there. That's everybody's dream.
Well, I mean, look that year in 2012. You have Wise Dan, you know, I think it was $7,000 stud fee. And Little Mike, that was probably the two best horses of the most two popular horses, you know, and look, between the two of them, probably was $7,000-$8,000 stud fee between the two of them.
Wow, where is Hey Jude now?
Hey Jude is at with Bull Lane in Paris, Kentucky, and she produced. We have a Lyons Mop on her side, and as soon we win in, on probably the end of November, I'm going to retire her. She born 1995, so, you know, she'd be 23 years old next year. So just she did enough, and she's going to go to Old Friends too.
Well, he's Carlo Vacarese. A great story there, talking about Hey Jude, the dam of Little Mike, the Breeders' Cup Turf winner. Carlo is with us here on Trainer Talk. We're going to get to a very short break. Stay with us. We'll come back. We'll visit more. We'll go back to the early days of Carlo Vacarese. We'll talk about growing up in Italy and how he got started in the game. That's all next. Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on HRN. November 4th, let your stars shine their brightest under the Fasig Tipton November Sale Spotlight. Poised to attract the bids of the world's leading buyers, no other sale packs as much thrill and excitement into one single session. The November sale was stronger than ever in 2017 with record gains as sellers realized top prices for their prized fillies, broodmares, and weanlings. Nominate now the Fasig Tipton November Sale, November 4th in Lexington, Kentucky. Learn more at phasicnovember.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizu with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross O'Brien, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
Hello, this is Stuart Morris. I've spent the last 30 years of my life in the thoroughbred industry. I've been fortunate to be surrounded by great mentors and great clientele base and phenomenal horses as I've come up. I started out with my father at Highclere and was fortunate to raise Silver Bullet Day. I sold the likes of Captain Steve and Silver Bullet Day. 3 years ago, I started my own consignment and have been very fortunate to have a lot of success in a short amount of time due to the great clientele base I have and the good folks that send me really quality horses that are raised the right way and get into good hands for us. We hang our shingle at most every sale east of the Mississippi River, and we hope to see you somewhere to buy your next stake horse at Stuart Morris Consignment.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trailblazer putting in a huge run, and Trailblazer now strikes the front. St. Nicholas Abbey winding up on the outside. Little Mike's hanging tough. Trailblazer up alongside and at the rail, point of entry, getting a late run, but it is Little Mike all heart. He's kicking on. Little Mike, point of entry, finishing strongly along the inside. Down the center, St. Nicholas Abbey. Little Mike in front though, and Little Mike in an upset. Little Mike won at point of entry, closing late but not quick enough. St. Nicholas Abbey third, Trailblazer and Sherita in a photo for four.
Well, we say it all the time. This is a game that is built on hopes and dreams. And that moment in 2012 at Santa Anita, a dream come true for our special guest on Trainer Talk tonight. That is trainer Carlo Vacareza. At that point, he was an owner, and he was the owner of 2012 Breeders' Cup Turf winner Little Mike. You heard Trevor Denman with the call, and what a moment it was. He told the story in the first half of the program about the mare and about being there for that particular race. And if you missed any portion of the show, all you have to do is head back to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this program and all of our Trainer Talk shows right there at horseracingradio.net. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studio. Carlo Vacareza was born in Genoa, Italy in 1951. And Carlo, I'm curious where this journey began for you. How did you get introduced to horse racing? What do you remember about those early days?
Well, I would say probably, I mean, I always have a love for horses, you know, and the sport and horse racing. I would say in the early 70s, you know, when I would have a restaurant in New York City, and I bought my first horse. And actually, we bought a horse at, you know, the defunct sale. There used to be a sale in November at Belmont Park. And I think they stopped that sale many years ago. And I bought a horse. And we did pretty good with a horse. You know, I think his name was Toga Times. And from there, you know, I continued buying more horses, you know, and, you know, I was getting more involved and going to the racetrack. I was really friendly with Johnny Campo and, you know, Woody Stevens and Tommy DeBonis. And they used to frequent my restaurant in New York City a lot, you know, and we used to talk about horses, you know, and I got the fever, you know, and I kept doing and got more involved, and, you know, and now we got a bunch of them.
Yeah, a bunch of them and some pretty good ones, too. How old were you when you moved to the United States?
I was early teens.
Okay. And you didn't have any interest in horse racing when you were in Italy?
Not really. You know, they don't have the part where I come from. They don't have a racetrack. The main racetrack is one is in Rome, and one is in Milan, and it's a racetrack in Sicily. But the part that I came from, we don't have horse racing.
What makes New York such a racing town. A lot of people don't think of it that way, but if you're in the horse business, you realize there's a lot of people in New York that love horse racing. But what about New York makes it like that?
I don't know. I mean, probably, you know, is the people is a very different community. I mean, different city. I mean, you have you know, a lot of Italians, a lot of Chinese people. You know, that they like to gamble, and you know, and they have the horses there, the best trainers in the world. They train at, in my opinion, they train at in Belmont Park in Saratoga. The quality of the race is great. The purses are good. You know, it's good for the gamblers. You know, because they have you know, probably a great return on their money. You know, and I think it's the whole environment and the whole of New York City and New York. You know, is always so vibrant, and I think the people that love horse in New York.
Do Italian people like to gamble? Is that kind of a trait?
They do. You know, they do a lot. I mean, you go to Milan, or you go to Rome. You know, and when they race, you know, on the weekends, they draw a pretty big crowd.
Uh-huh. Pope John the 23rd, there's a good story about him, and I hope I get it right, but he was considering three jobs. One was a farmer, and one was a gambler, and one was a priest. So he said, well, he didn't want to be a farmer. That was too much work for him, and he didn't think he'd do very well as a gambler, so he chose being a priest.
Well, he was a good one. he got to the top pretty fast.
Yeah.
Carlo, you've always been a restaurateur, and you mentioned your restaurant you had in New York City back in the 70s. Was that Rusty's, if I'm not mistaken? Is that right?
Yeah, it was Rusty Stubb. He was playing for the Detroit Tigers, and I got a call from then the CEO of Gulf and Western, Mr. Charlie Bluedorn. I said, listen, I said that he's a ball player from Detroit. He's going to have lunch with us tomorrow. You want to join us? So we have lunch with Rusty, and he was trying to move to, or they're going to be traded to the Mets. And he said, we'd like to open a restaurant in New York City. And we got together and we opened a restaurant called Rusty's on 73rd and 3rd, 1971. And we finally, we stuck together till 1984, till basically the lease ran out. And we decided not to renew the lease. So we spent probably like 13, 14 years together.
That's quite a run in the restaurant business too, and Rusty Staub, a household name on the baseball side of things. What was it like working with a guy like and being partners with a guy like Rusty Staub?
Oh, he was you know, rest in peace. You know, he was a phenomenal guy. You know, just you know, when he was traded to Montreal, you know, I used to call him Le Grand Orange, and in Montreal, he was like a movie star. You know, every place that we went, you know, he was one of the most recognized, you know, celebrity in New York City.
Yeah, he passed away in March of this year, and Rusty Staub no longer with us. As you said, rest in peace, Rusty. You had another restaurant in Miami years ago named Mickey's with another celebrity. Tell me about that.
Well, I know Mickey from, you know, my days, you know, in the city in Brooklyn. And in 1990, I moved to South Beach, Florida. And one day I got a call from Mickey, you know, trying to, let's open a club. So we decided to open a club on Washington Avenue in South Beach. And we'll call it Mickey's. And, you know, it was a lot of fun, you know. It was a lot of people in South Beach those days in the early 90s was, and, you know, was just first starting to get some recognition. It was was kind of a little party town, and it was great. We have a lot of fun. We did very well. You know, we sold the club thereafter. Actually, we sold the club to Madonna and Ingus Caceres and another gentleman from New York. So it was good.
Yeah,
very, very good.
And by the way, that is a Mickey Rourke that we're referring to with that restaurant, the actor Mickey Rourke. Doesn't everybody just sell a restaurant to Madonna, Carlo? Is that commonplace?
You know why? I'll be honest with you. The day that we sold the place, you know, I didn't know. I mean, just I saw the name of the, I saw the contracts on the name of the corporation, and we went for the closing, and she was there. I mean, it was shocking to me. But you know, she was a sweetheart. You know, very very nice person, and you know, and they did very well. You know,
she's Italian.
Yes.
Did you talk horses with her? Is she interested in horses at all?
No. We didn't talk horses. You know, I just waited for, you know, it was short. You know, the contract was on the table. I think they signed, we signed, and you know, we spent there maybe the most, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes, and that was it. But I visited a couple of times at the club, you know, and she was always nice to us.
How about Mickey Rourke and Rusty Staub? Did they enjoy horse racing?
You know, I don't think Rusty, but Mickey loved the horses. Actually, was at one time they're going to do a sequel of The Pope was Greenwich Village, that they're going to see like Mickey and his friend just jumping and playing at LaGuardia and land in Miami. And I go to a racetrack, goes to Gulfstream Park. That was the beginning of the sequel. But they talked for a while with some producers to do it, but, you know, it never took place.
Carlo Vacareza here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Carlo, you're still in the restaurant business. I have been to your restaurant in Deerfield Beach, Florida. That's Frank and Dino's, and have had some amazing meals in there. Tell me a little bit about that restaurant.
Well, actually, from the place that you visited last, we moved to Boca Raton.
Oh, okay.
And,
I haven't been to
that
one yet.
We just moved to a little bit north, like 3-4 miles north. And it's doing really well. Frank and Dino's, and we've been here for a year and a half. And we try to just to keep, good food and keep a good atmosphere, and we get a lot of people from up north, especially horsemen. They come here very frequently.
Where did that name come from?
Well, when I had the restaurant in New York City, another restaurant after Rusty's, I opened a place called Danoy. Frank Sinatra was one of my best customers. He used to, every time he was in the city, Frank, you know, he used to come, you know, to eat with us, to eat at the restaurant. And we became really friendly, you know, and, you know, sometimes I used to kitchen and I used to, you know, cook. I used to make some stuffed rigatoni for Frank. I used to love him. And we became really good friends, you know, and when we tried to get a concept of a restaurant, you know, tried to get the oldies and, you know, a great atmosphere, great food, you know. We figured out Frank Candino's is a great concept, it's a great name, you know. And the new restaurant here in Boca, that's what we do. We have live music. We try to have singers that sing, that, you know, Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra songs, you know, and people that love it.
Yeah, there's nothing like those two. Two of the all-time greatest entertainers. I mean, just amazing.
Carlo, what was a guy like Frank Sinatra like? How would you describe him?
Well, he was a saloon kind of guy. You know, he used to come to a restaurant. He didn't want to sit at the table. He used to like to go and, you know, sit at the bar and, you know, have a little Jack Daniels or glass of red wine. And we used to have a piano player there, you know, kind of a saloon piano player. And And he used to lean some time on, you know, on the piano. And, you know, his name was Mario Pipa. And he used to tell Mario to, he used to love to come to a restaurant and have Mario Pipa play all the Neapolitan songs, you know. And because Frank, I believe he has some roots in Naples, and he used to love those songs. So he used to say, Mario, play these songs. And, you know, he wasn't a big eater. You know, he was just more of a kind of likes to have little appetizers and drink a lot.
I love the guy.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, Carlo Becker. Go ahead, Carlo. No, go ahead. Yeah, Carlo Vacareza here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. He's joining us from down in Florida. He is one win shy of the 100 mark, hoping that that is going to change and he'll reach that milestone as a trainer coming up on Thursday. Carlo, one thing that you've done in recent years through your restaurant, Frank and Dino's, is that you've been able to give back to horse racing and to the community in Florida in so many different ways through fundraisers that you'll hold there. And I have attended a couple of the PDJF ones that you've had there to benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. That's something that's very important to you, isn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you know, it's unfortunately some of, it's unfortunate there's no better system for these kids, you know, being honest, you know, this kid usually, they come from, you know, maybe third world countries, you know, and they come to the United States. They are great jockeys, and they don't have any guidance, and they don't probably what they earn. They don't save any money. They don't look at the future. And God forbid they get into an accident and they get paralyzed or something happened to them. They have no place to go. And, you know, it's extremely important. We've been doing it for the last 6 years. You know, we donate the entire restaurant, you know, all the proceeds, 1,000% of what we collect, and goes to the PDGF. You know, we're doing a silent auction, and it, we've been so far very successful, and became a tradition that, the, you know, the Monday before the Florida Derby, you know, We have that celebration here at Frank and Dino's.
Yeah, it's just an amazing event and something that a lot of people look forward every year because the food's great and the cause is extra special for people in racing.
Do you still have the little mic room there, Carlo?
No. The new place is completely different. You know, we took all the pictures of the horses. Now it's more like you know, pictures of you know Frank Sinatra. It's a little more upscale, but we don't have a single picture of horses. Actually, some of those pictures that we took from the other restaurant, I donated them for the auction here on the past you know, event that we have for the PDGF. And they sold pretty good.
Yeah, well, speaking of raising money for great causes at your restaurant there in Boca Raton, this past February, the nation mourned as we watched the shootings at Stoneman Douglas High School. Both of your sons, Nick and Mikey, were students at that high school and were there that day. You raised money to benefit the families through a fundraiser that you had at your restaurant, But Carlo, as a father, to receive that phone call or get word that something like that is happening when your sons are there, take me back to that day. That had to be horrific.
Oh, that was crazy. I mean, I was at a restaurant and just left the bar and came to a restaurant. You know, probably was midday, and you know, and I don't know. We have a television, so breaking news was shooting in Parkland. So I figured some crazy guy pull up in a gas station, try to rob the money in this gas station, and that was, you know, that. Then was another breaking news, and they mentioned something about Stoneman Douglas, you know, and that just was one after the other. And I tried to get in touch with Nick, and he sent me a text message. Yeah, Dad, we're here. And all of a sudden, I think he dropped the phone or something, and they kept running. So I tried to call him back, and there was no answer. I tried to call Mikey, and I couldn't get in touch with Michael, and And I jumped in my car. I went to Parkland, you know, and as soon as I got too close to the school, there was like this stopping. They said, you can go through, you know, look at the sky. And I saw, you know, maybe 20, 30 helicopters, you know, flying around and ambulances. I mean, I never saw so many police cars in my life. And I told the police officer that, you know, that I don't know him that well, but, you know, he knows me a little bit. And I said, listen, I don't care. I'm going to go through. So I just pressed the gas and ran over. And I got next to clear to school. And of course, I couldn't find. I mean, it was a mayhem. I mean, people was running everywhere. And I couldn't find my kids. You know, it was... And then finally, you know, like an hour later, I got a text message from my wife, and I said, "Listen, we are in a coffee shop. So what happened is Nick and Mike, they jump over the fence and they run to somebody's property, and they went to another community, and they went inside Walmart. But normally then." The person that he ran with them was a shooter. The kid dropped the gun, and he tried to disguise himself. And he was in the group with Nikki and Mikey. They was running away from the school. So I mean, we didn't know that, you know, till after, you know, because so finally, you know, that was a horrific day, and then we started hearing the news that was, you know, two people die and four people and become 17 was just kind of was heartbreaking, you know. It's just, you know, the most troubled part of the whole story is like you send your kid to school to be safe, and if something like that happened, it's just kind of you know. You can't go nowhere. You're basically no safe anywhere. And you know, from that day on, I mean, just you know, took a toll on my kids. Not much Mikey because he wasn't there, but Nikki, one of his best friends, you know, Joaquin, they used to call him Wack. You know, he got shot in the head and the kid died. You know, and so I mean, Nick is still. Having a little bit of issues. Once in a while, he gets really sad, you know. And actually, I bought a horse by blame, and he told me that, you know, call him Little Wack, you know, G-U-A-C, you know, after his best friend, you know. So I did that.
Wow. Wow, never easy to hear those stories, and what a story that was. Carlo Vacareza here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. His sons, Nicky and Mike, are safe. And Nick is actually looking to honor his friend. And is that the same friend, Carlo, that was going to do the bodybuilding contest with him? Is that right? Because Nick is now going to do that on his own.
Right. He wants to do it, and actually sent me a text message yesterday. He wants to do it in the next few weeks, you know, and I don't know, he's fine, you know. That was because they used to work out together at the gym, and they used to be, you know, kind of a close friend. So he's working on it.
Yeah, that's very, very tough to deal with, and you know, our hearts go out to you and your boys and everybody that was involved in that. That was just a horrible day.
Yeah, indeed, and just you know, but one of the most rewarding thing was like the racing community. I mean, just we did fundraising here for Parkland, and you know, God, everybody came. I mean, I, you know, just and you know, everybody called me: Chad, Todd, Kim McLaughlin, Nick, Ralph Nix, the racetrack, Timmy Reedwell, PJ Camp. I mean, you name it. I'll be honest, you know, I feel. Bad that I can mention it, you know, every one of them, but it was very supportive, and we raised $182,000. That I mean, sound like a lot, but you know, it's never enough money just to you know, to bring 17 lights back, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Carlo Vacareza with us here on Trainer Talk. Carlo, your son Nick, we only have probably less than 5 minutes here before we have to wrap up the program, but your son Nick also wants to follow in your footsteps. He wants to be a trainer, and didn't he just spend the summer working with Chad Brown a little bit?
Yeah, he worked the whole Saratoga meet with Chad, and he helped us a lot. And the sale that just ended in Kentucky, the yearling sale, and you know, now he's in, like say, UK, and I think he's going to probably try to get a job, you know, either Winstar or with a TaylorMade, and that's what he wants to do. I mean, it's just his passion since he was a kid, and I think he's going to be very successful.
When we texted him and told him that you were going to be on this program tonight, he said he was happy about that, and he said he'll be on this show before too long.
Definitely. He's good. He's really good, and he's he loves his horses. He loves the people. People like him, you know. And you know, when you're 18, you know, you're on top of the world.
Well, Carlo, 3 minutes or so left in the program. I always like to end by asking trainers to let us know something about them that people might not know. So I'll ask it to you this way. When you're not at the racetrack, which I know is very rare, when you're not around the horses, which I know is very rare, what are some of the hobbies or things that you enjoy doing or following, collecting, whatever it might be?
Well, I don't have much time left in the day. I mean, I have the restaurant. I like to spend time in the restaurant, especially at night. You know, the restaurant's crowded, you meet people, and a lot of people, they ask about, you know, horse racing. We have the horse racing here on the all the television, the restaurant. So I like to do that. I like to go fishing once in a while, you know, when, you know, I have some time. I enjoy go fishing. But beside that, I don't have any other hobbies.
Yeah, well, I can't understand how you can do this. You're up like 24 hours a day. You get up at 4 in the morning, and then you run a restaurant all night. I mean, when do you sleep?
that's what I have. I have a sleep apnea in that. No, I try. You know, I just, you know, I go 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, I go to a barn, I finish about 10:30, I come to a restaurant, then I go home, then I come back around 5, 6 o'clock, and I don't stay like I used to. I used to stay really late at night at the restaurant, but, you know, by 9:30, 10 o'clock, I'm on my way home, so it's okay, you know, it's just a day's work.
Yeah. Carlo, you've done an amazing job with your entire life and, of course, now on the training side of things, too. And we can't thank you enough for spending a little time with us on Trainer Talk tonight. Want to wish you all the best in that quest for that 100th career victory and all the best moving forward, as I know there are many more yet to come.
Thank you so much.
All right, Carlo Vacareza here on Trainer Talk. What a nice guy and what an interesting life.
Yeah. He's an amazing man. He really is.
Yeah, simply spectacular. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, just head to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast at your leisure. You can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, and for our special guest, Carlo Vacareza, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tiffin.